I have to admit, we did it for the lulz. We discuss Smiley. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse.
Hello.
I'm Dan McCoy.
Hello. Hello, Stuart Wellington.
Back to that, huh?
How are you?
I'm Stuart Wellington.
Thank you.
And I'm great.
And who are you to my left?
My name is Elliot Kalin.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Elliot.
We are not meeting for the first time. We've known each other for many years now.
We're here for the Flophouse podcast.
Yeah. A podcast.
Crowd sound effect.
Cheer.
Yeah, like a cheer.
Applause,
or
applause. This is a podcast called The Flophouse, mm-hmm. where we watch a bad movie, and then we talk around it.
Just near it.
Sometimes talk of the movie means talk of a hunchback detective solving crimes on the Battlestar Galactica.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Most of the time it's, I don't know, cartoons or like kids sandwiches or
yeah we discuss kids sandwiches a lot. What the kids are eating, what the kids are wearing,
yeah,
what kind of sandwiches the kids are wearing these days.
And frequent listeners may notice that Elliot has taken over part of my introduction. I can only assume that's because I'm moving slowly because of my weird allergy attack that seems to have come on.
Yeah, what are you allergic to? Is it
lack of
movies?
Sympathy.
I'm allergic to not getting any letters about my knee.
Yep. You guys are just...
Wah, wah.
It's a vicious circle.
I'm baby boy Dan McCoy. I whine and cry all the time.
Oh, man. Is his diaper wet from pee or tears? Who knows?
Both.
You're making me wonder why I keep doing this.
I just created a new...
The only baby who uses a cane. Well, other than Baby Millionaire.
Old baby man, baby.
Baby Millionaire just does it as an affectation.
He's of course.
He's such an ill-tempered baby. He never gives any money to Hobo Baby.
He doesn't need... That's the thing. He doesn't need the cane to walk. He needs it to beat Hobo Baby as he walks
by.
Yeah,
to smack him.
He's just lucky that he has the motor skills to do that. He's just a baby. How did Millionaire Baby get his money?
I think he inherited it when he inherited the castle from the never-created cartoon show Castle Babies.
Was that the Castle Freak animated series with their babies?
There's probably a freak somewhere, but that's a season two plotline that never realized.
This is not Stuart Gordon's Castle Babies.
It's Stuart Wellington's Castle Babies.
So, tonight's bad
movie.
It
is sponsored by, what is it, that Gordon's fish sticks?
Yeah, Gordon's Fisherman fish sticks.
Yeah. If you want fish sticks that taste like they're prepared by Castle Freak, make them Gordon's.
If you want a fish stick that might be a ripped off Ding Dong, but probably isn't, try Stuart Gordon's Castle Freak fish sticks.
Make mine Gordon's.
So normally we actually talk about a movie instead of just random gibberish, right?
Not really. But okay. What movie did we watch tonight, Dan?
Well, we watched
what piece of crap did we watch tonight?
We watched a film called Smiley.
And now you use the word film only in the loosest sense to mean that we watched moving images with sound attached.
Yeah. Well, this was a horror
film. In a
film.
Rough narrative.
This was a bit of a Shocktober in April, if you will. Everyone's familiar, of course, of... Christmas in July, we're indulging ourselves in a little holiday spirit.
One of Preston Sturges' lesser films.
Yeah. It's pretty good still.
It's all right.
Halloween in April?
Mm-hmm. Halloween
yes,
in April.
That's what. Yep.
Shock-Loween in... Wait. Wait,
yeah,
I fucked this one up.
Yeah.
And then I rewind it.
This is my
Your
girlfriend, Shock-Loween.
I call her Shocky.
So this is a movie called Smiley.
Smiley. Now, it seems to be a movie... This movie was apparently made by a lot of people who had... a lot of experience making videos for YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and this was their first film.
It was a YouTube sketch channel or something?
Of some kind. But the movie, it starts out with it's not a great premise, but it's an interesting concept at least, that this is a horror movie based around internet culture, you know, message board culture and chat roulette and things like that. Subjects that usually when horror movies touch on them, they do it in kind of a goofy, we don't really know what we're talking about kind
except
of way.
Except for Fear.com. That was,
except, of
that
course,
was totally
Fear.com
100%.
And D. Snyder's Strangeland. But usually the internet in horror movies is like, we saw the movie Untraceable for the Flophouse a while back, where this guy had a snuff film website that was racking up literally tens of millions of views, mm-hmm. Which is
crazy. And the problem is
crazy.
He was untraceable. How are you going to take down a criminal?
Who's untraceable?
You need somebody who's limitless.
Wow. Now, if they made a sequel called Limitless versus Untraceable, and the movie was made as like kind of a Hong Kong action type thing,
yeah. Yep.
That'd be pretty great.
That's like one of those how many angels can dance on a head of a pen things. Like,
18,
is there anyone?
18 angels.
Is there anyone out there so limitless who can find someone who's untraceable?
That's the only way to ask. And, of course, X and Sever are going to get involved. Because X versus Sever, am I right? Ballistic.
Were you answering your own question?
You bet I was.
Those two to get together. Ballistic.
Now,
colon so, ballistic.
The problem is that this movie, it feels like it just basically throws a lot of internet talk at you all the time and mm-hmm. explains it a lot. It feels like it's
which for me is good because I don't know what the fuck they're talking about most of the time.
Well, it felt watching this with Stuart was like
you're
watching
an analog
this,
guy.
It felt like
in a
watching,
digital world.
Watching,
am I right, Stuart?
Watching Smiley with Stuart was like watching The Matrix with my dad when I had to explain everything to him. But this is like the things I'm explaining to Stuart are like what lulls are, what 4chan is. I mean, come on.
And what are lulls?
Well, lulls postulate that laughter is a unit of currency which can be exchanged for various extreme acts.
Yeah.
And this is explained many times in the movie. The movie uses the word lulls more times. I'm just going to make this claim
the
right
now. The
movie
has a great opening. It's as we put it, it's the classic reverse Candyman or
it's a ring classic or reverse Candyman situation.
It's a double ring. So the movie opens. It's your basic Scream type open where a character gets killed by the main killer.
Some girl in, I guess, booty shorts?
I think it's fair to call them booty shorts.
A girl in very short shorts.
Yeah.
She's a
struggling babysitter who can't afford the bottoms of her shorts.
There are three great performances.
Squarely framed
for the
audience.
There are three acceptable performances in this movie, and one of them is by her shorts.
Yeah.
But she is a babysitter.
The premise of the movie is explained by a wizened old child.
And a lot of times these movies, the urban legend or the folklore is explained by an old person.
Like a gypsy or something.
Yeah, a gypsy or the old crazy man in the neighborhood who knows all the neighborhood lore. But this is the internet. This is what kids know about.
Yeah.
So this girl is babysitting for a girl who seems like she's old enough.
Like a 12-year-old kid or something.
She doesn't need a babysitter.
Yeah.
But she and the girl explains to her the legend of Smiley. But as she says it, you know, the urban legend
about
Smiley.
She explains it's an urban legend. She's familiar with Jan Harald Brunvand's collections of urban legends. She's on top of this.
But, I'm going to fast forward to the end. Wait, no.
Let's explain what Smiley is, shall we?
Yeah.
So there's a chat roulette-like site called, like, Chat and Chew or something like that, or, you know.
Chat and Spittle. I don't know.
Chat and Spittle, Click and Talk. And,
yeah, whatever.
Click and Talk, the Taggart Brothers.
Click and Clack. And so you go on it, and you're just talking to random strangers. Who knows what connections you're going to make?
That sounds like fun.
Unless.
Well, you can
like
do that on the computer.
Chat roulette, one might even say.
I mentioned chat roulette before.
Some sort of chat.
Does that come with that? Does that come with that AOL CD that I got in the mail?
It does. The one that gives you 400,000 free hours.
You plug in
that
your
expire in a week.
And you get on your Angel Fire, and you can do one of those.
Now you're
gonna want
to wait to hear the modem make a lot of beeps and crackles, and that's how you'll know you're on the internet.
You beep and boop it up.
Now there's an urban legend about this guy Smiley. It seems if you type three times into this chat program, "I did it for the lulls," then Smiley appears behind the person you're talking to and kills them.
Yeah, and that's what makes it a reverse Candyman. You're not invoking Candyman to yourself.
To kill
yourself
for some stupid
reason.
Yeah,
you're sicking him on someone else.
Did you guys have a local Candyman? Because we did. I assume you guys have heard of Bloody Mary.
His name was Jeff. He sold candy to everybody.
I wasn't sure if Bloody Mary was like a regional thing.
No, Bloody Mary is sort of a general.
Because they made a movie about it.
Because I grew up with two different Bloody Marys.
Yeah, there's Bloody Mary Urban Legends.
And the drink. No, there was the Bloody Mary that if you said her name a couple times, she appeared. But also at my summer camp, there was a the local Bloody Mary figure who supposedly had worked in the cafeteria and had ground her hand up in a meat grinder by accident and now ran around with a hook on her hand killing kids.
And she was called Grindy Joan.
Yep. I met her once. She was pretty nice.
Okay. Yep.
And Grindy Joan. Why Joan?
Does she kill kids with like a hook or with the hook of her hand or like with
she a had
gun? Or?
It's okay. Weird. Yeah. She actually had a gun. But no, so I was wondering if you guys had any regional, you know, horror figures.
No.
Okay. No, we had one house in town that was both purported to be a stop on the Underground Railroad and purported to be haunted. And that's the closest thing to a local scare story I had growing up. But
yeah, we had this guy Frederick Krueger.
Frederick Krueger who owned Krueger's Hardware.
Yep. He was not a child murderer.
No. So anyway, we're like we've gone a long time without talking anything about the movie. This woman, she's talking to someone on chat roulette, and he says, "Hey, too bad I have to kill you," and types in, "I did it for the lulz" 3 times, and Smiley appears and stabs her. Cut to our heroine. Who is going
we got a
off-
guitar squeal. We get the title of the movie at this point.
Yep, says Smiley. And Smiley has a kind of grotesque face, which if anything seems like a fat man's belly with eyes and a mouth carved into it and then sewn up.
Yeah,
it's pretty
that's
gross.
Accurate.
So our main character, whose name was what? Stacy? No, Stacy was the first girl. Allison?
I don't know.
Ashley?
She's like
Ashley.
Ashley.
Yeah.
Ashley is starting off at college, and she has a single father. Her mother passed at some point, but her mother was also crazy and maybe took her own life. I don't remember. And so that's enough to set up that Ashley can be driven insane if necessary.
Yeah.
That her
genetic.
Mom had mental problems of some kind. She goes to school. She's living in a house off campus. Even though she's a freshman. With her new roommate, whose name is Proxy.
That's her internet handle.
But I think that's all that they call her.
Yeah, of course.
And Proxy inducts her into the strange world of internet people by going to a party at a guy's house. The guy, Zane, a kind of...
Zane of Zane's Sex Chronicles?
No, not of Zane's Sex Chronicles. Not urban erotica author Zane. Okay. Not Zane Grey, the cowboy author, and unfortunately not Billy Zane, star of The Roommate and Billy Zane's Sex Chronicles.
Which is just videos he took of himself and Kelly Brook.
Yeah, it's a good show.
But Zane is just like kind of an internet dick.
He's a douche, and his friends are all douches. And he tells them that his interests are the strange and retarded, in that he has a bookcase full of books with names like ancient aliens and stuff like that, and you know, Bigfoot goes to town.
The type of things a douche in college would have on his bookshelf.
Yeah, yeah. The Anarchist Cookbook and you know the Illuminatus trilogy and all that nonsense.
Yeah, Zen and the Art of Etc.
Zen and the Art of Etc. Perhaps the most Zen title ever.
The laziest of all the Zen and the Art of books.
Well, we all knew where I was going.
Zane and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
They have the lousiest party ever.
There's like 6 people there.
Yeah.
And
the lights are on the whole time. They're looking at the computer.
But what they do on the computer.
This is a summer session, right? Because there's no one hanging around the school.
Probably. But they go on this chat thing, and it's revealed that this is how the first girl got killed, is that she was chatting with one of the guys at the party, and he called up Smiley to kill her. It's like the movie Go. Where the storylines kind of overlap a little bit.
Okay. Magnolia?
Yeah, exactly, kind of. But in time, chronologically, too. So she is freaked out, but they're like, hey, whatever, it's just a crazy prank. It's a party. Let's get drunk.
She's high on weed, I think.
Oh, yeah, also they got high. By this point, they've walked across campus, and her roommate has explained to her what lulz are, 4chan, the internet, computers, Alan Turing, everything.
Yeah.
Digital, electricity, Benjamin Franklin, how fire works, you know, that kind of thing. Fireworks work, and how the movie Fireworks, directed by Takeshi Kitano, goes.
Yeah. Elliot made the point that the movie starts out as if it's a Christian film that was made to illustrate the evils of the internet.
It has the same kind of weird, stilted acting and directing, and a scene where a character goes, come on, I did it for the lulz? You don't know what that means? Yeah. Well, on the internet, lulz, like it's...
Let's explain what the internet is to you.
It's the scene...
Which was pretty helpful.
It's the scene... It's the scene. How do you not know these things, Stuart? It's the scene in every anti-drug TV show where someone goes, "What? You never smoked pot? Well, let me tell you what it's like. First, you do this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." It's the expository scene describing the dangers.
Feelings of euphoria.
And let me also say that I think it bears saying that this is the cheapest looking film since, speaking of Billy Zane, Memory from the very early days of the Flophouse podcast.
It's even cheaper looking than other internet horror movie Fireproof.
Fireproof, was that the legitimate Christian one?
Yeah, that was the one.
Yeah, that was in a horror movie.
It wasn't. I thought it was if you look at the internet enough, your house is going to burn down.
It was if you look at internet porn enough, your marriage is going to suffer.
That's pretty horrifying.
In a way, it's horrifying. Yeah,
it's like Synecdoche, New York.
Not at all. In no way is it like that.
They're both horror stories, just for a different point of view.
It's kind of a horror story, yeah.
I mean, it's a horror story in the sense that, like, it forces you to confront your own mortality.
I call it, like, existential horror, but Fireproof is not a horror story.
Okay, I think you're getting a sidetracked. Smiley.
So Ashley goes to class, and her teacher is played by Tony winner Roger Bart, who I saw in his Tony-winning role as Snoopy in Your Good Man Charlie Brown on Broadway. Fantastic performance. Kind of sad to see him in the movie Smiley. And
he channels a little bit of that.
He's the professor for seemingly the only class she has, which is kind of rudimentary basics of philosophy, reason, and ethics. And he's the method that the movie uses to get deep ideas into the film.
Yeah.
But he
mostly by having him declaim them.
Just tell them.
And those classroom scenes are great because it just shows a lot of just random kids with their mouths half open.
There's a lot of shots, close-ups of just college students listening, looking like real college students, like they don't want to be there, they don't know what's going on, they're not paying attention.
And Roger Bart is blowing their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says at one point, "You guys want your minds blown?"
And he totally does it. He blows their minds.
Blows their minds. Anyway, to make a long story short... There are a bunch of other characters, and Ashley gets deeper and deeper into the Smiley mythos. And
is he real? Is he not real?
And actually kills someone using Smiley herself.
Yeah.
She feels really guilty, and she goes...
Well, no, let's slow down a little bit. She goes into this chat roulette-esque thing. She sees a guy expose his wang to her and her her roommate.
Wang meaning penis.
And the roommate's like, "Let's do it. Let's fucking Smiley this guy."
Let's smile him up.
And it's like, you gotta really wish him dead. And she's like, "Okay, I got it. I'm wishing him dead. I did it all for the lulz." Types it in 3 times, and bang,
Smiley shows up, stabs him.
Yeah, and she feels guilty.
And she goes into a crazy spiral where she is hallucinating Smiley everywhere. He's chasing after her. He's in her dreams. He's all up in her head. He's in her kitchen. He's just, you know, all up around her.
Total flatliners.
It's basically like, flatliners.
There are something like 5 scenes where Smiley's attacking her and then she wakes up.
She spends most of the movie asleep. She spent
dreaming about Smiley.
I think she spent more time asleep than the main character in the movie awake.
She may be in love with Smiley the amount of time she spends dreaming about
him. If this was a romantic comedy, she and Smiley would be in love. Yeah.
And there's so many fake kills. Like, if you get killed enough times in your dreams, does it equal 1 kill for real?
If only. I think for that you'd have to talk to... I guess some kind of sleep doctor.
Okay.
Or perhaps a murder doctor.
Sure. Played by Roger Bart.
In an award-winning role.
Roger Bart in Murder Doctor on Broadway.
Murder Doctor, exclamation point.
Sleep Doctor, question mark.
The opening song is called Killin' in the City. And there's a big New York City backdrop. It's nighttime. You see your local New York characters. There's the cop, the hobo, the prostitute, the 3-card Monty guy, and a couple rushing home from the theater. "Oh, we better get home. It's dark out. You know what happens in the city after dark." A shadowy figure stabs them both, takes off the mask. It's Roger Bart. Audience goes crazy, applauds, and he sings the opening song, "Killin' After Dark in the City." The song is 4 hours long.
What?
Okay.
There's 18 songs in the show. Each one is no less than 2.5 hours.
So this is like the Cremaster cycle almost.
Matthew Barney wrote the whole thing.
Wow.
And Bjork did the music. Okay. Are they still together?
Matthew Barney and Bjork?
Yeah.
I don't know. If those two crazy kids can't make it work, what hope is there for the rest of us?
They're literally the only people I can think of where the phrase "crazy kids" accurately describes them. Matthew, Barney, and Bjork, or as they're known by their celebrity couple name, Bjorny. Oh, Bjorny was sighted out at La Scala.
And then once they have a kid, it's baby Bjorny.
Oh, Bjorny. Anyway, so with your swan dresses and your gelatinous sculptures. So anyway, she's in a depression spiral and a crazy spiral. She keeps dreaming Smiley's coming after her. She doesn't know who to trust, and one by one, Zane's gang of misfits and douches are being killed online. Smiley,
that doesn't
if
you sound will. That bad.
Not really. And she goes to the police, and for one beautiful scene, Keith David is there as a policeman who doesn't believe her, because there's a YouTube video of her smashing a computer at the library when she thinks Smiley is on it. So everyone thinks she's not so cuckoo crazy. She goes to a psychiatrist, gets a prescription for something.
Psychologist played by Paris from TV's Gilmore Girls.
Paris, you may know him from the Iliad.
Her.
Sure.
He gave a golden apple to the goddesses, yep, thus angering them. I don't remember how. And then stole Helen of Troy. A
later
face
on.
That launched a thousand shits. I may have misheard that.
Later on became capital of France, of course.
Yeah, he's had a long and rich career, and now he's in Smiley. So anyway, everyone
can't
thinks
win a wall.
Everyone
playing a woman.
Everyone yep. thinks it was the role he was born to play, except that he wasn't.
Because he was born a man.
Yes.
And then he Orlando'd into this woman, I guess.
He totally
Orlando'd it up. He said, for this role, I really got into the part. Orlando'd. I ladied it down and laid it all around.
Yeah.
So
people talk about Daniel Day-Lewis, but has he ever Orlando'd for a part?
Never.
He has not.
Not yet. Maybe.
In the future, perhaps.
He's going to have to, if he's going to play Harry Tubman, he's going to have to both Orlando and you know, become a black person.
All right. You're like trying to think of a non-racist way of
yeah,
saying
well, what it basically is,
nothing.
I came up nothing, so he's going to have to blur Orlando.
Yep.
Anyway.
That's the black exploitation of Orlando.
Yeah. This
Virginia Woolf's blur Orlando.
Yeah, so if someone make a poster
starring
for
Pam
that.
Pam Grier and Richard Roundtree.
Pam Grier and Richard Roundtree with Rudy Ray Moore as Tiresias.
Oh, has there ever been a greater contrast between high culture and low culture joke that has been made on this podcast?
I don't know, but somebody better make a poster for Virginia Woolf's Blur Lando. He's a she, sucker. That's the tagline. Anyway, so everyone thinks she's crazy, Cloud Cuckoo Land. And basically that's the movie, is her going crazy.
Yeah.
And
she walks around, she imagines this guy with a bottle is actually a Smiley, this guy who touches her on the shoulder is actually a Smiley.
Smiley, the guy, yeah. the computer nerd that works in the library that she has a flirtation with
Binder?
Is the Smiley. His name is Binder, yeah, because he was named after the first office product his mom saw when he was born.
Yeah, I like to think that like she was she was on the run, but she didn't realize that her child didn't also need to have like
an alias.
Alias.
Yes,
like,
my boy,
it's my new
Binder.
Baby. Binder.
His name was almost Industrial Three Hole Punch. So it cuts. Basically, that happens for an hour and a half with increasingly creepy scenes with Roger Bart. And there's one scene.
And the phrase, I did it all for the lulz.
And you hear the scene by
like
everyone.
50 times.
You know those commercials, I hate them, for movies where they have a lot of different characters saying the main character's name? So it's like, you know, Mumford, who is Mumford? That kind of garbage.
Everybody asks that.
Yeah. They could have done that ad with this with people saying, I did it for the lulz. Because every character says it. Keith David says it. Roger Bart says it.
It's in their contract.
It was in their contract that they had to say it?
Yeah, I read that somewhere.
Where did you?
On the internet.
That's where Smiley lives.
Yep.
And even Roger Bart's character says it, which doesn't make sense because he's not. Anyway, he's not part of the plot that emerges, really. He's just a red herring.
Isn't he?
Or,
and
as
Roger
they would
Bart
say.
Bart has never done anything for the lulz.
As they would say in Spanish, a herring o rojo. So they basically, by the end, she says, you know what? So they think Smiley's killed everybody. She walks into Zane's house. Zane's dead on the floor. She goes, I'm going to have to take out Smiley. So she sets it up so that she and her roommate, Proxy, are on the chat roulette site. She says, type it in three times. She's got a gun she took from Zane's house because Zane was just waving a gun around.
Part of me was hoping she was going to travel into like the weird Hellraiser universe and go try and murder Hellraiser, like at the end of Hellraiser Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't.
Sure, we all remember that.
Or she'd lawnmower man up and go into the cyberspace.
That would be awesome, too. But neither of those two things happen.
No, nobody neuromanced in this. Mm-hmm. There's a knock on the door. She thinks it's Smiley. She opens, fires. No, it's Binder. Oh, no, she's shot him. This is terrible. She goes, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
Smiley shot directly in the heart.
In the heart. He's not going to be okay. Smiley jumps up, cuts Binder's throat, which seems like overkill since he's just been shot.
Insult to injury.
She goes, ah, runs in the house. Another Smiley pops out. Ah, runs to the bedroom. Another Smiley. Ah.
So many Smileys.
There's like a room full of Smileys.
Miles of smiles coming at her. And she, the only way out is the window, so she leaps out the window to her death, which is when all the Smileys turn on the lights, take off their masks. Hey, it's the whole gang.
after we cut in,
it's everyone that we saw in the movie.
Almost
after we cut
every
in a
character.
Monologue from the professor, though, like explaining like why is it that people do what they do?
Yeah,
so that you're like, assholes? Oh, I guess the movie's over. She's dead. Smiley killed her. Who cares?
And before this, Roger Bart has also given a speech where he talks about how humanity is just for the next has created the next step of evolution, which is some kind of computer internet consciousness taking the form we assume of Smiley, which is stupid because why would a computer take the form of some kind of sewn up fat man belly who stabs people?
But, why was I born? Oh,
but so. But
why
so,
was why was I created with eyes and a mouth that were then sewn up immediately?
Why don't I have a nose? Why am I smiling? I have no mouth, but I'm a smile.
And why does he use a knife? I mean, you would think the internet would use lasers,
electricity,
or,
a virus,
fucking cats, or something.
Nanobots, a
nanocat of some kind.
Some sort of nanocat. Molecule
must has
cheeseburger.
Must has a tiny atomic cheeseburger. Now, for a movie about lulls, lolcats were not mentioned once, which is a disappointment. But anyway, so they like Stuart said, they cut together Roger Bart giving a speech about why do people do evil things. I don't know. So the way that bad movies do when it's the end of the movie and they want to tie a moral into the last scene, and all the Smileys just kind of stand around for a while and talk mm-hmm. about how great what they just did was. Is she dead? Yeah, she's dead. We killed her. Awesome. But is she dead? Yeah, she's totally dead. I'm so glad we did this. Why did we do it? Because she's dead now.
We did it for the lulz, and we're part of Anonymous, the hacker group, but not really, because that would be weird.
There's a weird
if we actually claim that we're part of Anonymous, an actual hacker group that exists in the world.
There's a weird bit where they're like, yeah, this is for Anonymous. And they're like, well, wouldn't Anonymous not be happy with us doing this? Hey, who's to say who's part of Anonymous? And it's like, shouldn't the movie be over by now? Like, why are we discussing your Anonymous manifesto?
Yeah. And it's like, oh,
hello.
And by the way, we hit a bunch of smiley masks in other colleges all around the
world.
They say
there's boxes of smiley masks all over in 20 different colleges. It's the first viral serial killer. Except that since she jumped out of a window to her death, the serial killer can't take credit for that. The Zodiac Killer didn't scare people out of windows. It's not like Jeffrey Dahmer was
scared
just going,
the bullets into
jumping
people,
out
sure.
of people and going, boo, so they fell out a window so he could eat them. It's not what serial killers do.
That's how he felt better about eating them. It's like, well, it's not my fault.
They did it.
Look, man.
They can't stand up. They can't stand up. Look,
That's not my problem.
If they can't keep themselves from falling out of windows, then who's the real bad guy?
I would just be wasting meat if I didn't eat them at this point.
Now, can you help me?
And I guess so their goal is probably to turn Smiley into some kind of urban legend.
Yeah, they're going to
create
the next
sort
of urban legend.
At the very beginning
cut.
Of the movie, the girl already explains that Smiley's
already
an urban
legend.
So what are they trying to do?
But then Zane is talking to Proxy over the computer because she's
as
in another
kids
house.
Do.
And even the girl that they killed in the first scene, Stacy, the babysitter, she's there. She's part of Smiley.com. Yeah. She's part of Smiley Corps. It's like they incorporated, I guess. And he's like, oh, man, I got a boner. Is that weird? And she's like, come on. Is she really dead? And he's like, yeah, she's dead. And they're like, Smiley's so great. Yeah, we love Smiley. And as a joke, he types in, I did it for the lulz to her. And she's like, oh, stop it. And then Smiley pops up behind her. But his face isn't a mask. It's really like a fat man's belly in a head. And then kills her, stabs her in the eye, and then waves goodbye at Zane. And then breaks the webcam, and that's the end of the movie. Credits roll, and then there's an after credit scene where Ashley, who's been lying dead on the pavement, opens her eyes and goes, and it's like, oh, so I guess they didn't kill her?
Yeah, I got a real problem with this. Either Smiley then, like, is a real thing.
Hold
that
up.
Smiley is called into existence.
It's just like, well, it's there.
Or Ashley's still alive. You can't have both.
No, because now Smiley's got to come back to finish the job for real. He's pissed at them that they killed someone. They fucked it up.
Yeah.
But it's their version of the first Nightmare, the first Friday the 13th ending, where it was Jason Voorhees' mom the whole time. Well, but then at the end, Monster Jason comes out of the river and kills that woman. You know, this is their, Smiley's real, huh? Can't wait for Smiley 2, the reelening.
Yeah, but they doubled up on it. Like, I would be fine if, like, Smiley was real,
like,
or, like, Ashley came back and was like, now I'm gonna become Smiley and kill all these bastards.
It would be like
in
if
American Psycho 2.
It would be like if the original Friday the 13th, after that ending where Jason shows up and pulls the woman in the water, at the end of the credits, Jason's mom, like, wakes up.
That would be heartwarming. She goes to the river, she picks up baby gross Jason, and takes him off.
Like, smushes her head back onto her body.
Yeah.
That's how bodies
the two of
work.
Them are like, oh, now we don't need to kill anyone else at Crystal Lake. We can just live together happily.
Yeah. And then they play that song, hey, let me tell you about my best friend. And they just have, there's like a montage of them playing in the park.
Yeah. Wow, he didn't even sing the whole thing.
Well, I don't know all the words to that song.
Okay.
It's not like the Golden Girls theme.
I don't want to have to ask half that. We don't want to.
At? Wait,
that's
what?
The company ASCAP. That makes hats that put you put on your butt.
ASCAP?
Yeah, ASCAP. I don't know if they really, you can't sit down or you crush your hat. That's the problem.
Yeah, it seems like a waste of a hat.
Yeah, you got to take it off every time you sit down.
Yeah. Danny Houston in Stolen was going to wear an ASCAP, but they thought it was too crazy.
No, so instead he wore a hat.
Regular hat.
That's what they're called.
Regular
head hat.
Regular old head hat. Reds are also known hats. Hat is actually a portmanteau for head hat. It's the H from head and the at from hat. So the end of the movie, have they called Smiley into existence? Did Smiley always exist? Who knows? We'll have to wait for the sequel, which will hopefully never be made.
The sequel, which will star another Tony winner in a depressing turn of events.
Patti LuPone in Smiley 2.
Yep. You know, guys, we've laughed a lot talking about this movie.
Norbert Leo Butts will be
so many Tony winners, and Keith David always comes back for one scene.
We've laughed a lot, but people shouldn't watch this movie under any circumstances.
No, it is a very poorly made, low budget, badly, and there's some. I mean,
are you skipping to Final Judgments? I don't even know.
You should.
I'll give you this.
If it shows up on your screen, either through like a Netflix thing or some like direct TV or something, just scratch your screen so you can't
just
see it anymore.
Just break your TV and then scratch your corneas so that you never see anything ever again.
Just type, I did it all for the lulz, into your computer 3 times.
And then break your computer.
Hope that
doesn't
Smiley
work.
Comes up and kills you so before you watch Smiley.
Because there are no lulls in this movie. I'll give you this. There's three performances I thought were good.
How many lulls were there?
Keith, zero lulls. Keith David has his scene is kind of fun because he's pretty tongue-in-cheek and he's just Keith David hamming it up.
Yeah.
Roger Bart gives it way more than he should because he's a professional. And that girl's shorts in the first scene don't totally cover her butt.
So what you're saying is you would like to see a movie called Roger Bart, Keith David, and Short Shorts.
It would be called
Beach Police.
It would be called
Roger Bart and Keith David and Beach Police.
It would be called Shorts That Don't Cover a Girl's Butt All the Way in the Roger Bart, Keith David Adventure. And now Roger Bart and Keith David have been kidnapped by the Scarlet Skull. He's not the Red Skull. We don't want to get sued. It's the Scarlet Skull.
Sure.
And he's kidnapped them. So they get a lot of scenes where they're tied up in a chair and they just banter back and forth. And
right
the girl whose shorts don't cover her butt all the way has a series of clothes-losing adventures to save them.
Yeah. All right.
And she has a magical sidekick who is a talking nude girl.
Wait, a nude girl who talks?
Who talks, and she has the magic power of not wearing clothes.
Yep, she's not animated. She's real life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like 3D.
Real live action.
Live
yeah.
action.
It's motion capture.
I like to call it real
life.
In that
they just have a person moving with a camera pointed at them.
I mean, Andy Serkis did it, right?
No. Andy Serkis, I think, trained them and had a move like they
but
were
is
really
Andy
nude.
Serkis nude in the movie?
No. Yes, because it turns out at the end he's the Scarlet Skull and he's totally nude. That's in the unrated Blu-ray, though.
Sure.
Not safe. I would like to invest in your movie, Elliot.
Okay, but this is a poorly and I'll you can go feel free. $700,000 is the price.
It's on Kickstarter. We only need one backer, $700,000,
and then we're done.
You get a T-shirt,
and your prize is a T-shirt, not a T-shirt of the movie, just a shirt that
your
I own.
Your prize is a T-shirt and a nude picture of Harry Andy Serkis.
He could shave for the picture if you want.
No.
Harry Anderson Circus.
The Harry Anderson Circus would be great. A lot of close-up magic, comedy. John Larroquette stops by. I'd love the Harry Anderson Circus. Mel Torme. So anyway, here's some problems with the movie. It's poorly made. Okay. It's shot in the way that, okay, you know what would make every shot look good? If characters were just in the center of the frame looking at the camera.
Yeah, staring straight into
hey,
it.
Wes
it's like
Anderson
a webcam, dude. Webcam.
Yeah. I mean, it does look like it was shot on a webcam, which is, in a better movie, would have taken advantage of that. Like, a better movie, if ever there was an excuse for a found footage movie made up of, like, webcam footage, this is an okay concept for that. And I like that it's a concept that it's so easy to do a horror movie that ignores cell phones and the internet because they kind of fuck up horror stories. Because it's so easy to look up help, figure out a mystery, or get in touch with somebody. It's hard to be totally alone and helpless when you have a cell phone. And so here it's like, well, let's work that out. But they do it so poorly. And like, and now that I think about it, they barely use cell phones in the movie. Like, even that they don't do well.
I think the first scene with a cell phone, she ends up slapping it out of a window.
Because she thinks Smiley is calling her.
Yeah, and then her roommate's downstairs like, hey!
You threw a phone at me? I do. There was a moment when Stuart invented Smiley's voice, which I thought was a pretty fantastic voice for the character.
Hey, it's me. Where do you want those lols?
Oh, you heard you wanted to deliver some lols?
I'm here for the lols delivery. Should I just put them in the bag?
Unfortunately, Smiley does not sound like a Hanna-Barbera character in the movie. He has no voice because he's not real till the very end. But this movie feels like a movie made by a bunch of like college kids who were doing it for a school project, and they got an F on it.
Yeah, let's move on to our final judgments. Is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? Elliot, what do you have to say?
Considering we've said nothing but bad things, and we almost didn't get to the movie because we had nothing to say about it, it's a bad, bad movie. It shows that it was made by people who don't really know how a movie is put together in a lot of ways, and it's instead of using its low-budgetness and its kind of thrown together raggedness as a virtue, it tries to be kind of a slick, stylish movie without any style or slickness, and it fails, you know?
Yeah, I would say this is almost a good, bad movie in that it is so incompetent in a way that
we
don't normally see on this show, actually. Like, we actually, because of the format, we see a lot of mediocre films rather than crazy films. And I almost want to reward it for being as bad as it was.
Compared to this, That's My Boy is Ron.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference.
But I do have to say that it doesn't have enough story for it to be a good, bad movie. Like, it has about 30 minutes of story for a 90-minute film, and I was too bored for me to go full, like, good, bad.
It feels like this could have been an episode of, like, Tales from the Dark Side or Monsters, you know, one of those shows. Tales from the Crypt 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
They should do an internet called like the Crypt Keeper's blog, and the Crypt Keeper opens it up as a vlog each time, and then it goes to the story, and the story's kind of set nowadays.
I mean, that's a terrible idea, but I could also see it actually working.
That's a great show. I mean, you wouldn't call it the Crypt Keeper's blog; you'd call it like Tales from the Internet or something.
That's not that good either.
The title's not great, but it's a good idea.
What do you say?
I think it was amazing. No, of course. It was terrible. This is a movie where none of the characters' motivations ever seem to make sense. For a movie that already feels stretched, it feels like there's missing scenes that explains why people are acting the way they're acting.
Yeah, it's both full of filler and full of bizarre shifts in character tone.
And a lot of the scenes feel like they have been just lifted out of other horror movies that the director's seen. Which I guess isn't surprising from, you know, people who make, I guess, very short internet films that are probably, I don't know, don't require a long narrative. Yeah, it's terrible. Don't ever watch this movie.
So you loved it.
I loved it. Like when Smiley's barfing blood all over. Great. Yeah.
Before we move on to our next segment, I just want to quickly say to listeners, why don't you go over and check out allthingscomedy.com that we have a... there's been a facelift.
The website's all new and all different, all better.
Don't be frightened of the internet.
Yeah.
Smiley might have scared you away.
Yeah. There is no interface for Smiley
there's
to get
no
at you through
All
Things
Comedy.
There's
no place for you to type in, I did it all for the lulz.
What about like the search?
You could type that in there.
Yeah, you could type it in once, but then there would be no results.
And I got to tell you, I listened to Smiley's podcast on All Things Comedy. It's pretty good.
Pretty funny.
It's hilarious.
It's called Doing It Lulz Style. It's him and Billy Connolly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, big get. Very big get.
He's got a charming accent. That
Not
fellow.
The comedian Billy Connolly.
Oh, okay.
No.
Just a guy.
No, William J. Connolly. He's a real estate agent.
Okay.
It's a comedy and real estate podcast.
Or you can also listen to us on TuneIn now, right?
Yeah. All Things Comedy is now on TuneIn. The TuneIn app is some kind of internet radio app. I shouldn't have said some kind of, so it sounded like I knew what I was talking about. But All Things Comedy is now on TuneIn, so go through the All Things Comedy website, go through TuneIn, or just listen on iTunes to All Things Comedy podcasts.
If you listen to your podcasts streaming rather than downloading them,
taking up memory
device,
space.
Yeah. You can listen to us through TuneIn. But now is the
winter of our discontent
on the podcast.
Made Glorious Summer by Smiley.
No, Richard III.
It was the
no.
best of times. It was the smiliest of times.
Now you're Dickens.
Call me Smish Smile. Ish Smiley.
You are jumping from genre to genre, era to era.
Yep, I'm like
too
Smiley
many
Orlando.
Genres.
I'm like Blorlando.
But this is the time on the podcast where we answer letters from listeners in the Flophouse Movie Mailbag.
Today's letter, R.
Okay, thank
Great.
You, Sesame Street.
Wow, we got this far and you finally made that joke?
Yep. Well, I've been writing songs, but nobody likes that, so.
Sure.
So this first letter is titled The Flopford Wives. Dear the Flophouse from Joe, I'm guessing Elliot either said Pesci, Piscopo, or Sixpack. No, he didn't. He didn't even.
I
give
didn't.
His typical
no,
joke.
I was gonna say a different Joe, but then I realized it was someone who was a friend of mine and not a reference.
Seeing as you're, seeing as you're all married and being in a relationship myself with somebody who prefers watching television series to movies,
it's pretty great, right?
I was wondering, seeing as it is the season, if you could share some films that you and Mrs. Flophouse like to watch together,
like. Films we've made that other people aren't supposed to see?
No, films that exist in the world.
Oh. Well, I mean, this exists in the world. There's one copy.
Okay. Also, I was wondering, being in a long-term relationship can take up most of one's free time.
That's for sure.
And I can imagine with
it's
Dan's
good,
acting role as Provisoid number one.
It's safe.
Elliot's job of categorizing every word that sounds like another word, and Stuart's repeated daily marathons of Castle Freak and Invisible Maniac, there doesn't seem like a lot of time for new films. So my question is, how do you find the time to watch these films that you recommend each week? I can only believe that each of you have these Superman-esque ability to reverse time, but instead of doing something heroic like saving a bus full of children, you spend the time catching up on your Netflix queue.
Yep.
Either that or you stay up until all hours of the night, your wives asleep long ago, your eyes sunken and bloodshot. You're trying to wipe the Cheeto dust from your shirt, but it's caked onto your fingers, and it only makes it worse. Yeah. You go to the bathroom to clean up, only to be greeted with the haggard face staring back at you, lost and confused, as if to say, what have I become? Either way, keep up with the good work. So, questions.
What an indictment.
Two questions. What movies do we enjoy watching with our wives, and how do we have time to watch movies without our wives? So, Elliot, what do you have to say for yourself?
My wife
You're
and
in
I,
the hot seat, we are, starring Dan McCoy as the seat.
Wait, and Stuart Wellington as Jamie Hot.
Wait, is Elliot sitting on
Time to turn up the heat,
let
guys.
Let me say, I crushed my ass cap. So sitting on you.
Oh, that's a comedy callback.
Comedy callback, hat on your butt. Anyway.
Trademark.
Trademark and CO Elliot Kalin. The CO stands for copyright, okay? So movies that I watch. Well, my wife and I actually, we have a couple movies we watch kind of regularly. We end up watching Fiddler on the Roof about twice a year during Jewish holiday times. It's just kind of a traditional thing for us and a story that means a lot to us. Other than that, I mean, lots of different types of movies. I don't know. It's not like we get together around the Yule log and watch the same movie all the time.
Yeah.
Except for Fiddler on the Roof, I guess. But, you know,
it'd be weird if you got together around the Yule log since you're Jewish.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a Jewish Yule log. It's not leavened.
A Jewel log.
It's a log made out of jewels. I mean, Up and WALL-E are both favorites of me and my wife that we watch every now and then. But really, Fiddler on the Roof is the main one.
I mean,
for us.
I know the answer to how you watch more movies, too, is that you get up in the morning and you watch movies.
Yeah, I get up a little earlier than I need to in the morning when I'm getting ready for work, and I watch. I almost never get to watch a movie all the way through, but like I watch about a half hour of a movie in the morning, and then at night when I'm doing the dishes, I watch a movie. Then I watch about 20-30 minutes. So it takes me more than a day to finish most of these movies, but. I found that dishwashing time and getting ready in the morning time are good movie watching times. That's when I watch movies that I know Danielle won't want to see because they have lots of blood or are Japanese.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Like, when it comes to movies that I watch with my wife, like, you know, my wife likes good movies. She enjoys things that are good. I just try most of the time to steer her away from the movies that I watch that are crazy, violent, or weird, like exploitation obscurities. That being said, this last weekend, myself and Mrs. Pervazoid number one watched Piranha 3DD.
Sure.
And enjoyed it thoroughly.
Was it double as much fun as the first one?
No, the Piranha 3D is fantastic. But
that's the movie to see on your wedding day.
A piece of trivia, Mrs. Pervazoid number one. A big fan of Piranha 3D. I don't know why, but for some reason.
Okay, I would have gotten that wrong in the last trivia challenge I was in.
Really dug it. And in terms of like.
When do you watch movies?
When do I have time to see movies? Like, I think it's just a question of what your priorities are. And my priorities are not doing things that are active or useful, but instead spending the time when my wife's not around. Catching up on films that I might be interested in.
That's when if my wife happens to be away for the weekend, I usually spend that time just sitting around watching movies. Yeah.
Yeah, I usually get to watch movies late at night after a bar shift, so at like 2 or 3 in the morning on nights that my wife has already fallen asleep.
So you're just like the guy in the letter.
Yeah, I'm exactly like the guy in the letter with extra Cheeto dust or Cool Ranch Dorito crumbs. And I also get to watch stuff during the day because I usually work nights. So when my wife is off working during the day, I am cracking open another Hellraiser episode.
Episode.
And finding out what's happening with that cube of his.
What's going on with Pennyhead these days?
And, of course, my wife does not want to watch anything with too much blood or, I don't know, if it's too long or slow. We watch a lot of romantic comedies together. If it's a romantic comedy with Katherine Heigl that I haven't watched for the Flophouse, I probably watched it at home with my wife. Mm-hmm. Love ya, honey.
But that's the thing. My wife doesn't like really bloody movies either, but like I can watch those movies with you guys. Like, but there are movies I watch with my wife that are more like 30s romance movies that my friends are not going to want to watch with me, you know?
Yeah.
Balances.
This next email is titled, Our Long National Nightmare is Finally Over. And it's from Sta, last name withheld. And
last name is Log 17.
Sta, I don't know. He, she writes, gentlemen. Wow. I don't know that. Gentlemen, ladies, Elliot Byrne.
I'm the lady?
Yeah, apparently. I write to you with news of the utmost importance. The ceaseless horror of our lives has finally ended, and our existence has some purpose. For as you can see, The Invisible Maniac has finally been released on DVD. For a mere $19, Amazon will burn you your very own copy. This means that Stewart's recommendations are no longer cruel tauntings designed to highlight the unattainable pleasure of, quote, a dude murdering another guy with a submarine sandwich and also jumping on a guy's head so it explodes like a pumpkin, and also there are lots and lots of boobs. Also, on the subject of Amazon, the bundle deal for Head of the Family is Castle Freak. Either somebody at Amazon likes the Flophouse, or Stewart has a bizarre and uncanny ability to alter the fabric of reality / the internet through repeated Dan and Elliot irritating suggestions.
He's just like the lay the heaven that way.
So, I mean, yeah, no, I we should address this. I'm aware of
the combo pack
of Invisible. Well, I was gonna say of the Invisible Maniac being available.
Yeah, you bought a copy.
For Stuart for his birthday. Now this is,
and I lamely, like a lame-o, only got him the Avengers.
Yeah. This is not necessarily an official copy of The Invisible Maniac, because I don't think such a thing exists. This is
not on DVD.
The Invisible Maniac has entered the public domain, and someone has decided to put it out on DVD.
I thought it was on Blu-ray, Dan.
No, I don't think that.
I believe the original film elements are lost. I don't think we can remaster them into Blu-ray quality.
I do think that the Castle Freak / Head of the Family thing is a direct from Salt of the Flophouse.
How
I can
would it have
only
happened?
Imagine.
Would people be buying the two of them from listening to the podcast?
I can only imagine that that's what's going on.
Because they're not made by the same
people. There's no other reason why this would be happening.
It's not the same company that released them, right?
I'm smiling knowingly right now.
Because he ordered 700 bundles.
We are, at this point, taste makers.
We are making tastes. How about, like...
And it tastes like submarine sandwiches and ding-dongs.
Yeah, so we are shaping the reality.
So whose fortunes are going to make or break this time? Smiley, I guess.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This letter...
Okay.
Is from...
Yes.
David.
Anytime. No.
Last name withheld.
Okay, thank goodness.
Elliot's brother.
No!
And it's titled Brookline High School. He says, howdy, floppers. I know it's been a while, and I'm sure you were feeling a void in all of your lives.
No.
Maybe not Elliot.
No.
But he's had to deal with me almost 28 years now, so he's earned a break, I guess. I wanted to bring to your attention a video you may have seen since it's making the rounds on the internet, but perhaps you haven't. If there's one thing I've noticed,
the trailer for Man of Steel, and it finally really gives you a sense of Superman.
If I've noticed one thing listening to this podcast, it's your deep affection for the fine work of Nicolas Cage. But there may be a group of movie fans who like him just a bit more than you.
Impossible.
As you can see in this YouTube video that was posted recently on filmdrunk.com.
Oh, is this about the people who posted pictures of him all over that school?
It says it's a clip from a local Boston area high school quiz show.
Oh, no, it's not.
In which the team from Brookline, when asked about their favorite movies, all make a point to snarkily pick some movie by Nicolas Cage. Some fun facts about Brookline High School, since you were wondering. Its alumni include my good friend Louisa. That's not a fact.
That's not a fact, nor is it fun.
Who was at Elliot's 30th birthday party. Doesn't make it any better.
Nope.
As well as Conan O'Brien, adorably non-threatening former presidential candidate Michael Dukakis, Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes, and Elliot's buddy John Hodgman.
Oh, okay.
No, good save.
Yeah.
Wondering why I haven't mentioned sports yet?
Nope.
The alumni also included New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft and former Boston Red Sox general manager and current president of baseball operations for the Chicago Cubs, Theo Epstein. Want a movie connection? It's also the alma mater of famous documentarians Albert and David Maisels. So, now that I've gotten through all that bulky exposition...
That's literally just random nonsense trivia. It's not exposition. This plot is not going to hinge on what he just told us.
My question is this. Do you think this foursome has a strong love-hate relationship with Nick Cage as you do? And for the hell of it, which Nicolas Cage movie that you've all watched at the Flophouse do you think was the worst? I look forward to your serious answers
to this question.
Yeah, I was going to say Bangkok Dangerous also.
I look forward to your serious answer to this question, which Stuart will surely not answer because he'll be too busy feigning disgust that I wrote in.
Wrong again,
showed
David.
You, David.
Showed you. He can be disgusted and answer your stupid
genuine
question.
Genuine disgust.
I thought he was going to write about, there was a college where these people photoshopped like 700 or 800 different pictures of Nicolas Cage's face on other photos or paintings and put them up in different classrooms. So they were all over the place. I thought that was a pretty good Nicolas Cage prank.
I did think we should read this because of last week's episode, or
the
previous episode.
Cage Miss in April.
Yeah. I would say I agree with you that the worst Cage movie we've seen
was
Bangkok Dangerous.
Terrible.
The best worst movie was probably Trespass.
Oh, yeah.
I know Stuart was not there for that.
Stolen was pretty good, too.
Next was really good, though.
Next was also pretty great. And how stupid it was. What was the one, Knowing? What was the one? That one wasn't very good.
No, that
the one where he knew stuff.
Totally new stuff in that movie.
But Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance had some stupid good fun
Drive Angry
in it.
3D rated R.
Drive Angry 3D rated R, NC-17 playing now at a theater near you. You have selected, etc. That was okay in terms of good badness. It tried a little too hard.
I mean, the thing is, when
and I
Nicolas
didn't like
Cage...
that there was a scene in the beginning where a clothed woman beat up a naked woman. That was weird. I didn't like it.
With Nicolas
and the
Cage,
scene where Nicolas Cage used
wrong.
A nude woman he was having sex with as a human shield.
Though I did like that he had sex fully clothed while she was nude.
With his sunglasses still on, too.
Of course he had his sunglasses
he's
on.
He's so unnaked, even his eyes can't be seen. But yeah, I don't think those kids like can possibly like Nicolas Cage as much as we do.
Yep. Let's see if their podcast has Nicolas Cage on as a guest star. Spoiler alert?
I mean, that's not going to happen.
I mean, I'm trying to summon him.
Yes, I did it for the cage. I did it for the cage. I did it for the cage. Yep. Then he jumps out and he puts a wig on you.
This final letter of the evening. Pardon me. My allergies are flaring up. Final letter.
Are you allergic to Krangs with boobs? Is that because one time before our last letter had one of those in it. Gesundheit. Are you sure not allergic to lulls?
I may be allergic to lulls.
I think you have an allergy.
If you say that word one more time, I'm going to rip my own face off.
Just like Nicolas Cage.
No!
This finer letter is from Chris
Lashman. This is a finer letter than the ones before. Much finer. But everyone, thanks for writing in, except David. Don't write in anymore. And everybody, thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
This letter's from Chris Lashman withheld. He writes a letter titled, Honor Roger Ebert by Dishonoring Rob Schneider. Dearest Dan, Stu, and L, it has been some time since you guys since you guys instigated one of your famed contests wherein the winner gets to choose a movie for you guys to take to task on the podcast.
We should do another one of those.
However, why let one contest winner rule like a tyrant over us all?
That's how
why
contests
not let
work.
Democracy reign for once in your miserable lives? Wow. Recently,
sweet
Cheeto-stained lives.
Recently, but maybe not recently by the time you get around to this email, Roger Ebert passed away. As people reflected upon his death, many of his famed barbed critiques of movies he despised were trotted out. My proposal is this. Take a handful of the movies Ebert had particularly harsh words for and let the Flophouse fans vote on which one they want you to cover on the podcast. Let us select from the likes of Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo, North, and Freddy Got Fingered. There has to be some way for you guys to get a poll up on the internet that would make this entry that make this easy for you and for the listeners. Or you guys could hold a contest where listeners have to come up with the best way for you guys to let fans pick a movie for you to watch, in which case I surely win. Chris last name withheld. That's a good because of our recording schedule, we did let Roger Ebert's passing pass without comment, unfortunately. I know that he personally meant a lot to me, movie-wise, and I think that you guys feel similarly.
Yeah.
And I think this is a pretty good idea. I have to say, Freddy Got Fingers is a movie I kind of like.
And I haven't seen North since it was in the theaters when I was a kid, and I also kind of liked it when I was a kid, I have to admit.
But
And I laughed at least one joke at Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo.
Wow, we are all history's greatest monsters.
Yep.
I do think that I think it's a good idea that maybe I could take a gander at the movies that made up Roger Ebert's I hated this movie.
Okay. White can Blue Velvet win? Because I think that's in that book. And that's a great movie.
I can put up a few selected ones in a poll on the website.
Okay.
Wait, are we really doing this,
then,
guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Then let
let's do it. Let's let the people decide so that we can crush
a movie
them.
That we review.
Okay, chill out. Don't put this much pressure on me. You guys are both looking at me weird.
Literally zero pressure on you. You have been asked to do nothing but what you already do.
Oh, so okay. I would say... I'll take a look at what movies might make it their way into such a poll, and then I'll put it up on the website, www.flophousepodcast.com, and let's say by the end of, I don't know, June? Is that too long?
That's a pretty long. The end of May.
The end of May. Whatever
we'll
gets...
We'll give you a month.
Yeah.
We'll give you weirdos a month to vote on it.
Whatever gets decided upon, will be the movie that we take a look at.
We're going to watch it, and then we'll talk about it, and then we'll see if the late Roger Ebert was right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was wrong,
he won't be able to argue with us.
Nope. That's the best thing about arguing with a person who's passed away, is they can't argue with you unless they come back as a ghost.
What?
Wait, are we going to do a bit about this, or?
I don't think so.
Probably should.
I mean, I thought we were pretty much done until Dan made that stupid noise.
Because I'm genuinely sad about his passing.
Yeah. It cracked through your cold robot heartless exterior to the one human organ beating General Grievous like within your inhuman metal shell.
Yeah.
And that's why you're coughing and sneezing. Because you're like General Grievous.
Yep. I've got an allergy to human emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And Jedis.
So
that's what it was. His Jedi allergy was acting up. Yeah.
It's weird because he carries like a million lightsabers. I think.
Yeah, you think he'd know. Yeah,
Jedi fever.
Said that kind of weird.
Yeah, said it as if it was like a sexy thing.
What do we do now?
This
Dan?
Is the final segment of the podcast where we make a recommendation, a movie that we actually enjoyed that the listeners might want to check out. Stuart, do you have anything you want to recommend?
Well, I'm going to dig deep into the Stuart's recommendation.
Dig deep to one of the three movies.
I'm going to recommend the movie Blood Diner, directed by Jackie Kong.
Blood Diamond.
Blood Diner. Wait, what did I say?
You said Blood Diamond.
No, you said Blood Diner.
Well, I'm going to recommend Blood Diner, directed by Jackie Kong, originally envisioned, I guess, to be a sequel to Blood Feast. And it kind of
Herschel Gordon Lewis film.
Yeah. And it kind of went off in its own direction. And it is a crazy horror movie about two brothers who, in an attempt to raise an Egyptian goddess or something, they open up this vegetarian restaurant, but they're just actually cooking, humans and feeding people, human meat. And it's very over the top. There's a lot of nudity. A naked woman with a very hairy bush performs karate on people. At least one person gets their head deep fried and then I think knocked off.
Wait, so it's still on their body?
Of course. It turns into like a giant hush puppy. So if you haven't seen it, it is a crazy person's movie. And you should watch it.
You can't spell crazy person without STUARTWELLINGT.
So watch it with your parents. Watch it with your wife. Who gives a shit? I don't.
Watch it with your wife's parents.
I would like to recommend here's a connection. Smiley was a movie I did not enjoy. That was a horror movie that had Roger Bart in it. I'm going to recommend a movie that I did enjoy that was a horror movie that also had Roger Bart in it.
It's called Smiley.
It's called Excision. It stars Annalyn McCord, who you may know from the 90210 remake. And it has an interesting cast. It has Tracy Lords. It has Ariel Winter, who plays the nerdy child on Modern Family. The aforementioned Roger Bart. It has John Waters, Malcolm McDowell, Marley Matlin.
Michael McDonald?
Ray Wise.
Proper plural.
Annalyn McCord plays a nerdy teen who has weird, sort of disturbing sexual fantasies that involve blood and surgery and similar things. And it's a film that is kind of a horror movie, but it's more of kind of a dark teen comedy in the Heathers mold, except for even more dark, I would say. And except for maybe the last sort of 5 to 10 minutes of it, which turn abruptly into a horror movie that's genuinely sort of disquieting and disturbing. But also I would say about it is that you don't normally see a movie about non-traditional like female sexuality unless it's a horror movie. And I don't want to get
or
into
a
like
porno.
But I don't want to get into like a whole like weird like feminist discussion about why that is, but it's kind of interesting to see. Excision is a movie that sort of until the end, sympathetically presents this character who is a like awkward teen girl who has like a non-traditional sexuality, and that's something that you don't.
What about Poison Ivy 2?
Sure, I guess. No, you're right, Stuart. You're right.
Poison Ivy 2: The New Batch.
You're right. I back off of my assertion.
Poison Ivy 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
I back off of my assertion. So I'm recommending Poison Ivy 2.
The Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah. Ellie, what's
so Excision, that was the name of your movie?
Excision. Yeah.
I'm going to recommend
two
movies in one, actually two. Very quickly, one is called Union Station. It's a noir from 1950 with William Holden and Nancy Olson and Irishman Barry Fitzgerald. And it's a movie that the first 20 minutes or so are a little slow and feel like a kind of rote crime movie. And I would say stick with it because at that point it becomes a much more brutal movie than you expect it to be. It's about a kidnapping that takes place in a train station. And the train station detective has to look into it, played by William Holden. And it becomes surprisingly kind of rough and violent for a movie from 1950 and surprisingly dark. And the guy who directed it, Rudolf Matte, worked as an assistant with Carl Dreyer and was cinematographer on a bunch of great movies, so it looks really great. And the longer it gets, the darker it gets. But it's a short movie. It's probably about an hour and a half, 80 minutes long. So that's Union Station. The other movie I saw recently that I liked a lot was a Japanese movie called Kurotokage, which means Black Lizard. this is not – there are two versions from the 60s of Black Lizard.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the one
Which
from,
one?
I'm talking about the 1962 one, oh, not the 1968 one. And the way you know is if Black Lizard, the mastermind female jewel thief, is being played by a male female impersonator, that's the 68 one. I haven't seen that. I've only read about it. But the 62 one where a woman plays the woman character is this kind of very fun but surprisingly sad at the end – crime musical where this mastermind female jewel thief keeps kidnapping the daughter of a jeweler who has this jewel that she wants a lot, and she matches wits with Kogoro Akechi, the Sherlock Holmes of Japan, and they pretty much fall in love with their matching wits with each other. And there are a number of great musical numbers in it. There's a lot of good dancing, and there's a scene where Black Lizard, the jewel thief mastermind, tells a sofa how she feels about it, because Akechi is sewn inside of it. That was his hiding place to get to her hideout, was inside of a sofa. And she it turns out she collects taxidermied human beings. And so they really have to get the daughter away from her. And I liked it. It's a movie that's pretty weird and goofy, but I found very touching at the same time.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going to rush out of the theater
for
that.
It's called Kurotogage.
We've all recommended movies that people have never heard of and probably won't watch.
Or be able to see.
I mean, I saw mine on television. You know, it was on Turner Classic. Both of these, I think, were Turner Classic movies.
I saw
Union
mine
Station is
on
streaming
a VHS
on Netflix.
Tape in my parents' basement like 15 years ago.
Well, Union Station is...
Might appear to me.
I might have made mine up. Union Station is currently streaming on Netflix and is also available on DVD. Kurotokage... I don't know if it's on DVD, but they might show it on Turner Classic Movies again. So,
all right. Well, guys,
knocked it out of the park.
Another successful
overlong episode where we barely talked about the movie. Flophouse! So, Dan, we left on kind of a cliffhanger in the last episode that you had left to join another podcast. What happened with that?
Yeah.
It was sort of one of those like renewal situations where I was trying to make sure that the network
like BMG.
You were hard bargaining with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I was driving a hard bargain with myself about how much money I was going to allot for the Flophouse.
I see.
Before I was allotting no money. And now I have bargained us up to $2.
Yeah, we did it.
What are we going to do with all that money?
Season 12 of the Flophouse is a go, guys.
Season 12?
Yeah.
We're doing 2.5 seasons a year? What?
Podcast seasons are weird. We'll talk about it off air.
Okay.
But in the meantime, for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I think I'm still Elliot Kalin, but I'm going to check as soon as we're done.
Good night, everyone.
So, I think Smiley drove me to drink tonight.
This will be your Is This a Bit for this episode?
What?
Is this for the
Lulz? Wait. Don't tell me what bit I do. I make them up as I go, and they're usually pretty crappy.
Guys, is this for the lulz? Wait, what?
Okay.
Come on.
What's lulz again?
How many times are we going to have to explain to you during the recording what a lull is?
Thor Chan? Set it off.
This stupid thing.
Let's set it off with Queen Latifah.
Yeah, let's taxi. Let's bring down the house. All right. You got me straight tripping, lulz.